Good morning, you beautiful bunch of fuckers, and welcome to my world. So just because I am live at the Louisville Truck Show from the show floor at the truckstop.com booth, I should probably explain my open because that word might sound a little different on the show floor here. I said fuckers. It's F-O-K-R. My tribe refers to me, to themselves, as friends of Kevin Rutherford. So I did not swear at everybody. I didn't drop an F-bomb, I promise. We're going to go live. Just checking a few numbers here, making sure everything's sounding good. I'm actually shocked that we're on the air. I've never used this setup before. Nothing like testing things in a pinch. The internet seems to be working. We've got and wires everywhere, but we just lost our audio. Oh, I know why. How about now? There we go. We got audio streaming. So I got to start all over. We had to make a last-minute change. I forgot to fix one button. Good morning, you beautiful bunch of fuckers. For a second time here on the show floor, time on the live app. I've already explained to the people on the show floor that I didn't call them an F-bomb. So we're on the air. We may or may not be able to take calls today. I might try one. We don't have a call screener, so if you are calling in, you're just going to end up sitting there. I'll try one. We were not able to get our phone system working this morning, but that's okay because we've got Joel and Henry here. We got a crowd starting to build. So what we will do is if I could get Aaron to maybe ask for some questions. So when we'll have some ready when we get ready to take some. Yeah, she's got a question right there. Sure she does. So it's a little weird today, but we're going to try to get going. Hey, say good morning, you guys. Make sure we can hear each other.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Say it again.
Good morning.
Yeah, we can hear you. All right, good. I see stream. Move yours closer. There you go.
Good morning.
There we go. All right. A little hotter on him. Talk so I know which one's you.
Good morning, Kevin.
All right. There we go. Let's try that. Keep talking.
How's that?
Talk about fuel mileage.
Fuel mileage. I don't know nothing about fuel mileage.
Well, pretend you know something about fuel mileage. Say something that you would say if you did know something about fuel mileage.
See, we need to manage speed. It's speed management.
Got it. So the faster we go, the more money we're going to make.
Yeah, there you go.
We
well,
good?
There's a debate
up
to
on
start
him.
The day out with.
Absolutely.
Up now, Aaron. Joel, keep
Better?
Talking.
All
there
right.
we go. All right. See, not only is this a highly complicated system that I tried to figure out myself, and I'm not an audio engineer, but I should probably have two audio engineers here adjusting things while I'm trying to talk. But it sounds like we've got it. So
I did stay in Holiday Inn Express last week, so
well,
maybe.
Henry, why aren't you over here then? Come on. Sheesh.
Switch him up.
All right. Hey, there's another fuel mileage superstar walking up. Jamie Hagan, shout hello, and we'll see if anybody can hear you. All right. Good morning. Hey, Jamie, when was the first time you started thinking about working on fuel economy? How many years ago? Don't make me do the math. No, how many years ago? Come on, pick a number. 30? Henry?
I'm thinking it's right. It's over 30.
30? Let's call it 30.
Yeah.
Joel?
35-ish.
So if you're 35, I'm probably 33. Yeah, like 120, I don't know.
140-ish. Yeah.
130 years experience in fuel economy. Hey, you know what? What? Now, Henry's got to be hotter. Henry, just speak up, man.
All right.
You guys are making me work for this.
And by the way, I believe
I just thought of something.
It's 37.
37? Now we're at
150.
We're at 150 then, maybe.
There you go.
Here's a problem, guys. If we claim that, we weren't using diesel fuel 157 years ago. It's not going to make sense. They're going to call us liars now. They probably already do, so.
Pretty much.
I know.
That's right.
Now, we have another huge handicap for me, anyway, that normally I can hear myself in my headset, and I can hear you guys. I can't hear anything in our headset. So when you guys start talking about something, I'll play around. Joel, why don't you start off with your tell us what has happened since you left wherever you left, headed here. Give us a play-by-play. Anything interesting happen? How'd you get into the show? Anything cool happened since you've been here? That kind of stuff. Henry, you do the color commentary. And I need 10 minutes out of you guys.
Gotcha.
Got it. All right.
We can do 10 minutes.
Easy. Hit it.
So before we came down to the show, I was at Michigan MD Alignment, getting the truck tweaked before we came down, making sure everything was right. Jim Fowler done a
somebody grab Aaron
stellar job on the truck. And we had a new air ride front suspension put on the truck, so it was kind of fun coming down, testing the new suspension out to see how everything worked. And just a fun trip down, really. Got the truck into the show. Our detailed
truck. All right, we're
going to
start playing around with some volume, so you people on the show floor might not hear for a second.
I thought
keep
we had
talking,
10 minutes.
Guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep talking.
Okay.
I'll just be talking over you.
Well, then.
So then after we got the truck in and the detail truck was late, we had a detailer show up out of the blue and kind of saved our bacon and detailed the truck and done a stellar job on it, got everything ready to rock and roll, and here we are. So it was a good trip, fun trip coming down.
And y'all didn't wake me up when you saw me already sleeping here when you got here.
I thought about doing that. So where'd you come in from?
I came in from Charlotte, and it was pretty enjoyable because, as you know, my runs are usually boom, boom, boom. I have 15, 20 minutes to spare type deals. And I had 8.5 hours to get here, and I said, this is bad, me having this much time. I'm going to stop and visit people. And
so there you go.
But I ran 60, 62 all the way across and just
good
soaked
trip
up the fuel mileage when I had the chance to do it to that level.
Which is
awesome.
I
think we got it.
Good.
Can you guys hear something in your headset now?
I cannot.
I always have voices in my head.
Well, you guys seem to be doing okay. I'm the one, and I can hear now, so that's all that matters.
It's
good.
It's just a staff meeting. I work for myself, so.
You know, I just finished the CMC, and we did this kind of like a personality profile. You ever do any of that stuff, Riggs, whatever that one is?
I always fail them.
You're not supposed to be able to fail them.
Yeah,
you've got to
have
sure,
a personality.
I'm
it
sure
just
you
may
can
not be a good one.
So I've done 100 of them probably. They're all kind of fun, you know. Yeah, that's me. I get it. I took one that way they did it was just, it was so cool that we tested everybody in the company because they even tell you how to mix and match personalities to get the best results and not conflict. I've given it to classes and taught them how to do it. So it was right on the fly. But before we went to lunch, I thought about it at the CMC. And I said, hey, we're going to do something fun. I said, I have a test. This one's super easy. It's 34 questions, and you only have 35 seconds to answer each question.
Wow.
But they're really, really simple. Here's one that's like an example. And I said, don't freak out that it's an office setting because the setting has nothing to do with it. They're asking how you would react in a situation. Then they might ask you how that would work outside. And so just – all you're going to do is they're going to give you a situation, and then they're going to ask you what you would do. So it's something like your coworker stole your greatest idea, took it to the boss, they implemented it, she got a raise and a promotion. What are you going to do? What do you do? And one of the answers is going to be for somebody who is like a very nurturing, caring kind of person. And what they're identifying are the strengths that you could potentially develop. You may not have that strength, but that's the strength you should work on because it is your true strength, whether you have it or not. So it would be, there's like nurturing, caring kind of people. So they would do something like, and there will be an answer like this, you take some time to, you know, relax and reflect on all the benefits of the friendship, and then you sit down and talk with her and say, it's okay, but in the future, could we, talk about these things first. And I'm like, I can't even read that. I'm going to gag. And then the other one is, and this one's me, you immediately quit, go start a competing company. Or that's me. Yeah, that one worked.
I was that, or get a better pair of sneakers so I could run faster to feed her to the office.
Yeah, and there are some others that are the personality is more of like they connect and you know, make everybody work together. They would have a different answer. And they do this over and over and over, different situations. And then they come up with, there's 9 possible. And the top 2, the whole idea of the book is stop trying to be everything or stop trying to be something you're just not.
Absolutely.
You will frustrate yourself. I did this for a long time. When we started a business, and all of us started one person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you think I have to do everything. And it was hard. I hated some of that stuff. So what I did, because if I hate this and I'm no good at it, that's what I have to practice. I'm good at those. It's logical, doesn't it?
Sure.
This was so extreme that they said, do not ever do that. You always stay in your top 2. It's like the old transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that one, top 2?
Mm-hmm.
Stay in your top 2, even if something that has to get done just doesn't even get done. What's the worst? I mean, if it's going to put you out of business, but really think about that. And then as soon as you can, pay or hire people to do all the other stuff. And when I made that shift, changed everything. And now today, everything about our company is built on my top 2 strengths. Aaron has 2 completely different strengths. Lisa has 2. That was pure luck because we took it after we knew this. But when we hire people, we know what position. We know what scores or what 2 strengths are going to fit best, and that's how we hire.
Gotcha.
Everybody is happier. That's the biggest, because people aren't doing things they don't want to. What got kind of funny was I said, I'll tell you one of the things about my 2 is that when I am talking to you, especially when there's a conflict or you're upset, you are going to get a totally different response. And I said, here's what I don't say this. Well, I might, because I don't care. And what it came down to is I said, I don't give a rip about your feelings. Your feelings are irrelevant to this. This is business. There are no feelings at business.
No.
And so what happens, though, is first off, when people take the test, one of the responses I know I'm going to give somebody in the group is, that's not me. And I'll look at them and say, it is. Tested the test over and over and over. But what you're feeling right now, and I don't use the word feeling. I did that for kind of fun. What you're experiencing right now is you don't like the 2. So you want to convince yourself that they're not you. You wanted, especially men, you want some strong alpha trait, but we just found out you're a nurturer. No, I'm not. Well, okay. Yeah, don't, if you want to argue with me, you can, but I will tell you, that's what it is. But the real message, if you want to succeed, that you get from this is focus on those 2, and none are good or bad. We need all of them. So what we have to figure out is how do we build your company around your strengths and then find other people to fill in the others.
It's exactly what I've done with Alpha Drivers.
Awesome.
I kind of had the mechanical part of it down, understanding the technology of the trucking.
Yeah.
The business part, it's Greek to me.
Right.
It just is.
Right.
So I teamed up with Alec. Alec was kind of,
I see that all the time.
He understood.
Yeah.
He understands it to a certain degree, but on the business end of thing and with legal aspects, it works really great.
Well, you do understand business. Probably
to
as
a certain
much
degree.
As he understands your part.
Right. To a certain degree.
Yeah. So I can see that in 30 seconds talking to you two.
Yeah.
And here's a clue on... The other thing is, the more you study this, the more you work with this, you develop a really good skill. And what it is it's to be able to identify this in somebody else pretty quickly and then know how you should relate to them. Now, if I'm in a group or I'm trying to get a problem solved or I've got an employee, my employees are going to know I'm not a nurturer. I'm never going to be a nurturer. But if I have to work with somebody and build a relationship and I know they're a nurturer, well, I've got to get into their world. I've got to just back off on the whole alpha tendencies here, and I got to slow down and I have to talk to them the way they need to be talked to.
Right.
And that's our job.
Right.
And they don't have to talk to us that way. They don't even know this is going on.
Right.
It's our job to say, I just got to set all that aside for a second, and I'm going to start using things like, I'm sensing that your feelings are a little hurt today, and I really didn't mean to do that. And you would be amazed when you start to do it, how it becomes so easy.
You know who excelled at that?
Who?
Bill Clinton.
Ah,
he can feel your pain.
You're right.
You are right. Yes, absolutely.
And look, I will tell you, I was pretty young then, but I was just starting to get interested in politics.
Watch some of his stuff, his own speeches and stuff. He's a master at that.
At the time, I hadn't really developed really strong ideas about politics quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was so impressed by him. By him as a person.
Yeah.
And I wasn't looking at political stuff.
He connects on every level.
He was a master.
Yeah. Bubba. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of fun with it. So they did it at lunch. It's so easy. And then I would pick people out of the audience and say, read me your top two, and I'll help you understand, because you're going to say, it's not mine. We'll get through that. But I want to get you, even if you don't get it, pretend for me right now. Just play with me and think about it, because what I want to do, I know that unless you embrace this, you're never going to be all you could be. Your business won't be. So play with me right now, because I need you to do that so I can go to the next step. The next step is starting to get people to understand on how you build a business first around your strengths. Here's a good example. Who do you think would be better at sales? This is one of the best examples of this. The alpha hard driver, or that soft, touchy-feely nurturer?
To me, I found that really depends on who you're dealing with when you go in.
Well, but we got to remember, we have to play to our strengths first, unless we can identify somebody else's. So if each one is playing to their strengths like they should be, I'm the alpha, I can, you know, I'm going to be the one talking.
That's how I generally go.
Right. And the other nurturer, they're going to go in and be there. Who would make a better salesperson?
The alpha.
No, I would think the alpha.
That's what I would think until I studied all this. And here's why this is so powerful. Because now every nurturer is now thinking, well, I'll never make it in sales. It's not true.
Mm-hmm. They build it.
What is another tendency, a really strong tendency of a nurturer that none of us have? And it's a really important thing in sales.
Well, I think they build that relationship.
Yeah, well, they will, but how? What strength? Because I have to build it. You have to build it. We have to figure out how to do it with our strength.
But the nurturer does it, but they get in there. It's the warm, the cuddly. They're empathetic.
There's one more thing. Aren't nurturers really good listeners?
Okay.
We're not. We want to talk. We know what we want to say. We have to be careful we don't dominate the whole conversation.
Okay.
But they care about your feelings. Tell me how you're feeling today. Is that a strong sales technique?
Sure.
So now they have to learn how to at some point be more aggressive to finish. We have to do the opposite. We have to tone it way down until we can connect. Then we can start to move. Isn't that, when you start to think about it, isn't that powerful?
It is. And it's really funny when you say that, because I read a book on it in my truck.
Yeah.
I always keep a business suit for when I go in to negotiate.
Of course you do.
Right. Well, you but I read this book on changing the color of your tie. And depending who I was dealing with, like if it was this
blue,
calm person.
Light blue.
But there were some people you came in black suit, red tie. Because
of course. That's the power tie.
Yeah. You were
black suit,
but
red.
The difference that it made was absolutely amazing just with the colors that you came in with.
Now imagine if you learn how to start customizing your language and your body language and your movements to
the
person you're talking to, it changes everything. And I have had people that I meet, we make a pretty quick connection, and they'll always make comments. It just happened to me. We may tell that story because it was a big one for me here. We made an instant connection. I mean, way faster than almost any other time.
Right.
What it told me was what I'm learning is working. I've been doing this for 25 years. You get better at it all the time, like anything. So I know it's working for me, but I also know this person I'm talking to, whether he can verbalize it or not, he has all these skills, because it can't happen that fast unless you're both doing it.
Right.
And that was when it happened, I thought, This guy understands it. He may have read the book and took the test, but even if he didn't,
sure,
he somehow knows it, and it is so powerful when it happens.
And when you know something instinctively, it automatically doubles the power of
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
well, one of the things I do that along that way, and I guess maybe I got more nurture than I wanted to admit, but when I do a lot of driver training at small fleets, and the drivers are complaining, the truck did this, the truck did that, instead of jumping, no, it can't do that. I'm always like, yeah, it did that.
So,
and I agree with them, and then I draw them in, but now we can have
exactly
a conversation.
So absolutely, what we're seeing now, I gave the two extremes because that's the best way to see. You are going to be one of those in the middle somewhere. You're showing both of those tendencies. I almost never show that kind of warm, fuzzy.
So I call it running towards them.
So again, I would think those people in the middle could be the best salespeople. Sales is a great one to take. You know one of the hardest to apply this to? Truck drivers.
Yeah.
They don't want to interact with people at all.
No.
We're all introverts.
A lot of them, that's why they chose the job.
We're all introverts. We would prefer to be in the truck. So these skills almost always come back to people skills. So now we have to take these skills and say, okay, what if I wasn't dealing with people? I still have to do stuff. So we can still apply these. But the easiest way to understand it is kind of a sales person to person. And this
right
gets deeper and deeper and deeper. At 25 years, I learned more in that room than they did. They were still so, this is so new, I can't get it. I got to do it so many times.
So I see this with salespeople all the time. I see the handshaker and the baby kisser. They do very, very well. They'll sell thousands of trucks. And the guy that actually knows the technical end of things, he struggles because he doesn't have that social skill and exactly
so,
what you're talking about.
So let's
about
talk about that.
That's how they end up with 308 gears.
That's exactly right.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about
exactly
that.
Exactly right.
If you know this now and you're running a truck dealership, this isn't good, but I think we can fix this easy now because we put our salespeople out there to sell with a technical person that's going to be their support after the sale.
You'd almost have to run it as
right
a team.
And
right
I do that with a lot of them.
We've yeah had rooms full of classic salespeople that have all the nurturing skills you're talking about.
Right.
They're completely lost on the technical side, and they're going to sell that customer whatever that customer's asking for,
well,
whether it's right or wrong.
Well, what's the classic struggle in a company like that? The salesman oversold and overpromised,
yes,
and now the customer service
yes
people have to deal with the promises
yes
that they can never fill, so they got to try. It's mm classic, right?
Yes.
We got to. If you know this stuff, you could design the perfect sales support team.
It's needed.
And a,
yeah,
and a system to
yeah
do
oh
that.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yes, this is your role. Don't ever try to do this role. It would be better to tell the customer, you have to wait a week to talk to that person than to let them talk to me.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, customer service, my God, I don't get me anywhere near that stuff.
Right.
We'll lose every customer.
No, same way.
Because instead of, what are we going to do? And I'm not, it's not that we're going to be nasty to them. That would never happen. But here's what is going to happen. Instead of listening to them and making sure they understand and feel right, we would immediately try to solve the problem. That's what we are. We're problem solvers.
Right.
So we would jump in before they even finish the sentence, and we would say, I got a solution for you, and we will make them crazy. That is, isn't that the classic husband-wife thing? The wife just wants to talk about it. She doesn't want you to solve anything. But we start to solve it. It frustrates her. She's not listening to what we're trying to tell her. And we're like, we're fixing this for you. Why are you getting more mad?
Right, right.
What I see happen so often, especially when they're dealing with drivers on that side, which I get to do a lot, and you do that on the training. On the alpha side, you want to jump in, and you end up digging a trench. Now nobody's moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to find somewhere that you can agree.
Well, that's a good analogy. Everybody digs their foxhole, and it becomes a war. It's a battle now. And
nothing's
all,
moving.
Nothing moves. I'll bet this one kind of concept, you could take this to every company and make immediate improvements.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
But we never get to this kind of stuff. Or seen some of the stuff that's supposed to be like this, and in the real world, it just doesn't even work.
Right.
It's why I get excited about this one, because I've seen it work
sure
over and over and over for 25 years. Here's another reason why I'm excited about it. 34 questions. You have 35 seconds to answer. It's so quick and easy. I've seen some of those. By the time I'm done answering these questions, I'm exhausted. They're so complicated,
right,
or they want you to think about this, or there's 17 questions here and 120. This is quick, easy. And I thought it was going to be one of those fun, goofy things.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the most powerful concepts I've ever seen. And by the way, this was not on my radar to talk about when I opened the show today.
I know that it wasn't.
Wasn't even close. I don't even know how or what triggered me.
Your radar wasn't on when you were starting the show. You were in wiring.
I was in wiring.
You were not in your field of expertise.
I was in wiring. And I just realized something, that if I'm not touching my screen, it goes blank, and I have no idea what's going on. But I don't care because it's working for now. We're good.
We'll work with it.
So did you ever finish your story?
Yeah, we got some more.
What was he talking about?
His trip down here.
Oh, yeah.
So you're next.
I got it before
him. He got through his, too.
Because I run faster.
So I'm the only one.
You're the only one.
So I'll tell my story. So I think everybody knows I've traveled by coach for a lot of years now. They're usually long trips, multiple events, which is why I like traveling by coach. I get in multiple events. The bad side is I'm away from home. We used to do it together all the time, my wife and I, but she's so busy running the business now. As the business grows, she is the COO. She handles everyday operations. She's got her hands in everything. She's so busy, she had to travel to a big trade show in L.A. I picked her up at the train station in Portland on Sunday night. She dropped me off at the airport in Portland on Monday morning. So first time I've had to get on a plane in a long time. Then there was something else different. I can't even remember the last time I checked a bag on a plane. I had a rule.
Wow.
I don't care if I'm going someplace 3 weeks.
Right.
I will wash clothes 10 times. I am taking one check on bag. Because of all this equipment,
right,
wasn't going to work.
Right.
And then the challenge is, okay, I have a bag of equipment and a bag of clothes, toiletries, all that stuff. What if they lose my bag? Which one should I carry with me?
Right. Obviously the equipment.
No, because I need clothes.
Yeah, but they sell them at stores.
So that was the challenge. I kept going back and forth. What about this? The equipment, you're right, I couldn't replace it.
And you have clothes on your back. You could just clean them every day.
So ultimately, that was the decision I made after all the back and forth. I'm going to take the equipment. And I had it in my mind. And I did it. And I check in. And I get on the plane. And I thought, I brought the wrong bag. After all that, I checked the wrong bag. So it is what it is. The other thing I was really, was in the back of my mind, for the last 2 or 3 years, have there been some horrendous stories about airplane travel? Fights, people being thrown off planes, planes have to turn around and go back because of a fight, wheels fall off,
doors fall off.
They're running off runways all over the place. Not that I have no thought that I'm going to die on a plane because the odds of that are still so high. But what if one thing goes wrong enough that I don't even get there? I've got the CMC to do. Even if it makes me a day late, it could just, so I'm worried. Haven't flown in a long time. I'm thinking it's really bad. I might say that this was the best airplane trip I can remember in a long time.
Nice. Well, you had your expectation levels set pretty low, it sounds like.
Yeah, but like the flights went well, no problem in security, right to the gate, found a nice, comfortable place to sit with power. I could work on my presentation. In fact, every time I would sit down, work on my presentation. I would get annoyed that I had to get up and get on the plane. Then I get on the plane, nice Boeing 737 MAX 8. They have power connectors right at the seat. I don't have to worry about running out of power. I'm working on my presentation. The next thing I know, we're landing in Chicago, and I'm annoyed again. I got to get up, get out of the plane. So I get out in Chicago, walk off my gate. I look. Guess what gate I'm going out of? Same gate I just pulled into. How often does that happen?
Nice. All right.
Then I'm getting really hungry. I've been up late, early, haven't had anything to eat.
And your favorite restaurant's right there.
I don't even know this restaurant, but I look over, and the restaurant's called Pork.
Hey, nice.
And I walk over. They have all the smoked meat I could possibly want. I'm like, just pinch me. Did I win the lottery?
There you go.
I sit down with my meat, start working on the presentation. Next thing I know, they're calling me to get on the plane. I'm like, I thought I had 2 hours. Oh, it's been 2 hours.
It's early.
I got to get up again. I get up, get on the plane, perfect seat, perfect flight. I'm annoyed because we're landing. So it couldn't have gone any better. The one glitch in the whole trip, since I haven't checked a bag in a long time, I'm heading through the airport, not even thinking about going to get a bag.
Uh-oh.
But it's my lucky day. Aaron calls me. He landed an hour before me. We're talking about our flights, and Aaron said something about his bag. And I said, Aaron, oh, my, you just saved me. I got to go get my bag. I had forgotten all about it. Wasn't even thinking about it. So Aaron says, hey, I got a couple other things I got to talk about. I said, good, let's talk about them. I'm walking through the airport. We talk about them. I said, hey, I'm at the door. I got to get up and get my lift. Hit the thing for the lift. I'm out there thinking about my presentation, get in the car. We're pulling right up to the hotel, and I look at my phone. I'm getting a call from Southwest Airlines. I never picked up my bag.
Nice.
I was just talking about it. That was the only glitch, and it was my fault. So I had to go back to the airport, get my bag, go back to the hotel. That was my trip.
Well, you had too many things going right, so something had to.
If that was the worst of it, boy, I would take that every time. Somebody told me the trip will be perfect, except you have to make two trips back and forth. Sign me up. I'll take that. Do we have any questions out there? Anybody want to ask anything at all? All right, we'll keep talking.
I got to go.
Good.
Good.
We have got a huge surprise. The CMC, anybody who was the CMC the last several years is going to be very excited about our co-host who is going to take Henry's seat. Henry, thank you, by the way.
Good to see you.
Are you here for the whole show?
Yeah, I'm here till Sunday.
So I'm here till Sunday, too. If you're not doing anything else, maybe we'll have breakfast Sunday morning. Usually everybody's gone.
Yeah,
let's
sure.
talk about that. All right. So
it's been a long time.
I'm not even going to introduce you. How about that?
All right. I'll introduce myself.
There you go.
How's that? My name is Chuck Snow. I go under the Instagram handle Chuck Snow CEO. I had an incredible career in logistics and trucking. It was almost 50 years. I am now the co-host of a weekly podcast that's been out there. Kevin actually started it, called Rates and Lanes. He
Is
gave it
still
over.
You and Rico?
Rico and I
Fantastic.
Are still.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it. So real quick, I'm going to interrupt you all.
Go
day
ahead.
So get used
please.
To it.
Go ahead.
Rico was at CMC.
Yes.
He was so good. I asked him to speak sometimes at the CMC. And then I said, Rico, I have this idea to build this podcast network. Not just me. There's so many amazing people. I want to help you get started and see what happens. So Rico said, I will do it. He took over. I never had to touch him. I mean, once I said, here's how you do it, I didn't even talk to him. The next thing I know, you're becoming a regular guest. then it's yours. I am so glad that you guys are still doing this.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to interrupt you again.
Go ahead.
I have a, without getting into the whole thing,
right.
We are now building what I wanted to then. We have our own platform. We are starting to add other industry podcasts to it. You keep doing everything you're doing. We just distribute it through ours.
Okay.
And we are building the audio road work. So you think about it. I'm not putting you on the spot.
You're not putting me on. And we'd be very interested. I can speak for Rico because him and I talk all the time. And we'd be very interested.
We will get Aaron right on it, and we'll have you on there in no time.
And we need to get you on the
Absolutely. Rico.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I know exactly what we want to talk about with you.
it's
a hot subject.
My favorite topic.
Yes,
I bet
sir.
It is. All right. So keep going. Hey.
So I've had a great career, and that's why I'm still doing this. I retired 2 years ago. I had started a company in 1979 called Trafix, and it's a load broker. It's an asset-light load broker. And I got to tell you, this industry has been so incredible to me and to my family that I always felt that I owed it. And now I'm really getting a chance to pay it forward. I mentor people, and we have this podcast, and I am it's non-monetized, so we don't take on any advertising. We just do it
Good.
Because we want to make
We don't either.
Yeah, we just do it because it's the right thing to do. And I'm also involved with Next Gen Trucking to bring young people into the industry because, I'll be honest, when I got into this industry, I was a 21-year-old misfit.
Hold on a second. I want you to tell it the way you told me once, the outlaw aspect, everything that was going on back then. Come on, go dig deep.
Okay.
Dig deep.
So way, way back. All right. So I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. I'll have you guys
You
hear
can go as long as you want.
Well, we did 4 hours once.
Yes, we did.
True story.
Yeah.
I'll take it easy on you because I see you're standing. Unless Landstar will give you all those chairs there. We could.
Hey, Bob. Can we get some chairs over here for these guys?
So way back, I wanted to get into trucking at about 3 years old, but, you know, it wasn't happening. And then when I was about 9, my parents started to import gladiolas, which is a type of flowers, out of Florida. And my eyes just, everything opened up for me. And the fellow that owned the trucking company that would haul the gladiolas from Florida up to Canada, his drivers were a really big influence. As a matter of fact, I had dinner last night with the man who owned that trucking company with his son, and he was speaking here yesterday, and our father did business together 62 years ago. That's how long. So anyways, I had this love for the trucking industry. My parents were like flipped out because they wanted me to be an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor. And as a child, I was actually punished if when I brought home a bad report card, which is every semester.
Well, boy, you and I could talk.
And after I got sent to my room, then I was told I couldn't talk about trucks for 3 weeks. I couldn't say the word truck. My 97-year-old mother recently said to me, you know, Charlie, she always calls me Charlie, I'm sorry. We were so hard on you, and we put you through so much. And you as a little guy knew what you wanted. We wouldn't listen. And she said, I'm sorry. I said, don't worry about it, Mom. It all worked out. So when I was 21, because you couldn't get near a truck, this was 1974, you could not get near a truck unless you had family that was in the trucking business or in the Teamsters Union or something. And for my 21st birthday, a buddy of mine rented me a tractor. And it was a Ford W model cab over. And we knew how to drive it, run through the gears up, but we didn't know how to gear it down. And by the time we brought the truck back that night, all you could smell in that whole area of downtown Toronto was clutch.
Because
we didn't know what the hell we were doing.
Yeah.
And then a couple weeks later, a friend of mine said, let's rent a tractor and a trailer. And and we had a driver, a guy that drove, show us just how to make the corners wide. And we figured that out. We did okay with that. But we didn't know that this truck, it had a 13-speed underdrive. And we were driving it like a 13-speed overdrive, and this thing was clanging and banging till we finally figured out how to drive it. So we're bringing it. We had gone north about 60 miles north of Toronto. It was time to come back. It was Sunday night. And my friend said, oh, why don't you take this road here? And it's a really nice side road, and you can get to use the gears. So we go on this side road, and all of a sudden, there's a 45-degree turn. Now, I've never driven with a trailer before this day, and I tried to make it, and we're rubbing against trees, and there's cars trying to get home Sunday night from their cottages backing up behind us on this side road to get off the main road. And an angel shows up who had lived on that road, and he said, what the hell are you guys doing? We kind of said, I don't know. He says, I've been driving trucks for 40 years. I've never seen a truck on this road. I knew you boys were in trouble when I heard you coming. So he said, here, back it up. And I'd never backed one up before. So I start backing up, and it's going on. It's not going the way. He said, do you want me to do it? I go, yeah. So anyways, he backs it up, and we were all good then. We took the truck back. We felt good about it. So I still had the bug. Now it was real strong. And then I saw an ad in the paper. I called up places for a job. Of course, everybody laughed at me. What sort of experience do you have? Well, not much. And remember, back in 1974, trucking was a real coveted job. Okay, in today's money, truck drivers, company truck drivers made in today's money about $100,000 a year. So you couldn't get a job in trucking very easily. So then what happened was I found an ad in the paper for a truck with a contract going to the U.S. So I called, and the guy said, yeah, come on in and see me. Went in to see the guy. bought this 74 model Mack cab over from him.
Nice.
With two sticks.
Did you ever have one of those?
And
no.
Well, me either.
He said, listen, you haven't had a lot of experience. I said, no, not really. He says, I'm going to send you west with a guy that knows what he's doing in his truck. So same Ford as I had made a mess of a couple weeks ago with the clutch. Same truck, same transmission. We go trucking. And he drove all night. And then early in the morning, I took over. And I drove it the way I thought. And he said, he was the best teacher in the world. French-Canadian fellow named Yvonne Eboy. And he said, no, you're going to kill the truck. Don't you just wait on it. I'm going to show you how to drive. And within 3 minutes, the guy showed me how to drive without a clutch and downshift. He was the best teacher. And we went out west, and we delivered this load to a mine. And it was a potash mine. It was on a flatbed, but we had racks. So then we ended up, the dispatcher sent us to he sent us way the hell in northwest Saskatchewan, almost to the Alberta border. He sent us to pick up a load of cows on a flatbed with sides. Well, we had to stop, and we had to get gravel at a building company and spread it around so the cows would have some. Now, neither one of us have never been near a cow except at the Royal Winter Fair or eating a steak. So this old cowhand, he's loading us up, and it's almost dark. And we're loading up 54 heifers, come back to Toronto. And he said, you boys have a cattle prod.
54?
Yes,
heifers. You can get 54
in
heifers?
A 45-foot.
You can?
Yeah, you pack them in real tight.
I can't even imagine that.
Anyways, we put them in, and he said to me,
wow.
He said, you guys, what are you going to do if a beef goes down? I go, a beef goes down? What are you talking about? What are you going to do if a beef goes down? I go, I don't know.
I have a question.
And go ahead.
If we call, when we eat chicken, we call it chicken. Why don't we call it cow when we eat a cow?
That's right.
It'd be easier.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So finally he said, well, if they go down and you can't get them up, you're responsible. He said, have you got a cattle prod? And he said, no, fat. So he thinks for a minute and scratches his head. He goes, okay, have you got warm ginger ale? I said, no. And he thinks for another minute. He goes, okay, boys, if a beef goes down, just go and pee in her ear. That'll get her up. So about 3-4 hours later on the side of some dark Saskatchewan highway with a flashlight, we go to check the load, and sure enough, there's a cow down, and here's Yvonne and I with our things out, peeing in this cow's ear.
I have a quick question.
Go ahead.
Was it live streamed on Instagram?
No.
Oh, okay. It will be today.
Oh, yeah. So we finally get home, and I had a broken rib and a broken toe by the time I got home driving a cab over. You know, and my rib really hurt. And after that, I never hauled beef. So anyways, I got involved in trucking, and a few days later, I started a little trucking company, and in the first year, now this was 1978, started this little trucking company with one Hertz truck and one Hertz trailer, and I called it Charles Snow and Sons. I didn't have any sons. I had two dogs, and I had a driver, and I put him on the truck, and within a year, we had 12 trucks.
Nice.
Hertz and Ryder. We did $1 million business. That year, over $1 million. Contract.
Wow.
We had a load day going to Santa Clara, California, and coming back. And then my first business partner and I were talking one day. He says, you know, this is a lot of aggravation. How about we open up a load brokerage? And
well, that'll be easy.
So, yeah, why not? Let's do it. So we open up this load brokerage. And you got to remember, 1978, freight was still deregulated and
yeah.
Load just started, but they could only broker exempt commodities.
Okay.
And we were brokering everything.
Real quick, Robinson, next, a produce broker.
Robinson, who allegedly ran off, he got out fairly quickly and then ran off the yard. And they're still a large produce order to this day. They still have business going. So, but we didn't bother with produce, really. And we just hauled dry freight. And then as soon as we started, we had this, we couldn't get a name. And every time we went to the government for a name, we had to go to government to have a name approved in those days. It was too close to this, too close to that. And the government, and finally my lawyer at frustration, said, just start a numbered company, pick the name Traffix.
Nice.
And everything was good. We bought, moved off. We got to the office. We got a sign. We had all this stuff. And I am phone. Like, good morning, Traffix. And the third or fourth call was a guy I knew, Gordy Young. And Gordy said, what did you say? I said, good morning, Traffix. And Gordy said, how'd you sell that? How'd you sell that? I go, E-R-F-I-X. He goes, are you blind? I go, well,
hi.
And so I said to him, Traffix. Called Traffix.
No.
He said, the court decisions made against them for illegal trucking, and they're still today, but they don't, you know, don't do any trucking.
Wow.
So, anyways, he said, I would change the name. So I called the up in Brantford, Ontario, and I said, do you guys do any trucking? So, no, we're just browsing. Okay, fine. Shortly after, right from the Ontario Deputy Minister of Transport for Ontario, I was their number one public enemy.
The picture was in the post office.
It could have been, yes. And it was a great, great game of cat and mouse. It lasted from 1979 until 1986.
Wow.
And we spent, back then, close to about $1 million. And we went to the Supreme Court of Canada, even.
Wow.
And when we lost at the Supreme Court of Canada, the lawyer called me, and he said, listen, we've lost. What do you want us to do? I said, well, appeal it. And he goes, you can't appeal a Supreme Court decision. And I said, in my exact words were, I thought you graduated from Harvard Law. That's what it says on your card. Have you never heard of the Hague? He goes, the world court? He said, are you out of your mind? I said, no, I don't need to win. I just need to buy time. So he said, no, let's try another case in London, Ontario. And we took another case, identical, went before a judge, and the judge deemed us legal, the Ontario Ministry of Transport illegal. And I got a phone call 3 days later from the deputy minister, and he goes, have you let the press know about your win? I go, no, not yet. And he goes, don't bring your lawyer in. So I brought my lawyer to the deputy minister's office. And they had their guys, we had our guys, we sat at a table. And the deputy minister said, how much did you spend fighting us? And I said, well, about $1 million. And he goes, that is nothing compared to what we've spent fighting you.
Oh, boy.
He says, okay, we got to make a deal here. If you plead guilty to a few charges of illegal trucking, then what we will
I
do,
love that.
I know.
What we will do is we will never charge you guys again. I said, okay, how about one charge $5,000? Because that was the maximum. So they were true to their word. I gave them I paid the 10 things, and they were true to their words. And then 6 months later, deregulation happened.
Yeah.
And
wow.
When deregulation happened, now, most of you, I'm looking at, oh, dear, the majority of you don't even know about deregulation,
right.
Okay? And I hear people call up on radio and stuff like that. We got to regulate. Guys, you don't want to regulate.
They just don't get it.
It was the worst thing, because regulation meant that fellow there could haul widgets for the XYZ widget company from Chicago to Des Moines, but he couldn't haul anything else, and he couldn't haul anything from Des Moines back to Chicago.
It was the most inefficient system you could ever create.
And you know what? I'm not going to get political on this show, but I got to tell you, it was one of the best things Jimmy Carter, but maybe the only good thing he ever did.
Absolutely.
But he deregulated the trucking industry in order to allow for the free flow of goods off the ports because they saw the future was going to be in ocean freight.
Yeah.
And there's no way a regulated environment would allow for that.
So having lived through regulation, would you agree that in a regulated environment, it always favors fleets that operate with economies of scale?
Of course.
The bigger the fleet. Because
the
margins are always smaller.
Of course.
And they've got more trucks to leverage the margin.
And in all honesty, the margins were large for them because that man had if he had a lane from Chicago to Des Moines, there's nobody else here that haul that lane. So he could get $12 a mile.
Sure.
In reality, go ahead. Finish.
The owner-operator that is wanting the regulation, they're putting a gun to their head.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
Absolutely.
100%.
Well, absolutely. Okay.
I think I understand this. I've studied this. I'm fascinated by it. That's why I love your story. I never get tired of it. Hold on one second.
Good.
I have to do the most important thing of the trip. I've wanted to wait to a certain time. I'm close enough. If I wait 9 more minutes, I'll see another squirrel, and I'll miss it. my best friend in the world is having a birthday today.
Okay.
So I want to wish my best friend a birthday, Lisa, my wife. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday, Lisa. I hope she's listening.
Happy birthday, Lisa, from Chuck Snow.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yay. Happy birthday, Lisa. All right. Got past that one without seeing a squirrel. I was worried. Because you see, you can take about 10 seconds for me sometimes.
Yeah.
So, all right.
So, yeah. So that we fought that regulated system, and it does work, and we need the flow. And yes, I know right now business is in the toilet, but it'll get good again.
So let me ask this.
Go ahead.
This is never going to happen. Never. It would be such a huge hit on the economy
that we can't even predict.
So talking about it is almost a waste of time. These groups keep pushing it.
I know.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
And you understand this. So, or correct me if I'm wrong. During regulation, the government did trade.
Right.
Or the total supply of trucks because they wouldn't issue any authority, right?
Exactly.
And they control
the authority. Had to control all the rigmarole. You had a room full of customers. Use your service and bringing them at your expense to Washington, D.C. or wherever for a hearing, and the competition is there.
Right, right. No, that's exactly right.
Worse than I thought.
That's exactly right.
And
my story's going
to
get better.
You have to explain why you should have that lane from Chicago to Detroit, and the people that are, or Chicago to Des Moines, and the people servicing that are going to buck you. And their customers are going to say, we have enough trucks serving that lane. But the other customers you brought are, there's not enough trucks.
So at the height of regulation, that system had to be, first off, so inefficient.
It was.
It's a wonder we even managed as a country. But it also had to be incredibly complicated because you've got, like you said, one carrier can go here, not here. How do you find the carrier you need? That had to be crazy. But if I think about it now, and these people who are screaming for it. Right now, it's been a wide open market for 44 years. And the way it should be, we know that the last 3 years, authorities exploded.
Yes.
Broker authorities exploded.
Yep.
We've lost some, not nearly enough. The people who are screaming for this, I want you to explain to me, if somehow it got passed, how we would have to eliminate a lot of authorities, wouldn't we, right off the bat?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So the people who are screaming for it would be put out of business. There isn't
the
even any doubt whatsoever.
Yeah.
How would they even do this?
Well, they did it once before.
Did they?
Way back. That's how deregulation happened, or regulation happened.
Oh.
So years ago, in like the 30s, maybe the 20s or the 30s, Kevin Rutherford could own a truck and drive
just
all over.
like any other business, right?
Free.
You start a business. You don't go ask the government for permission to be in business. You start a business.
Right.
You go to any customer you want,
right,
and say, I can do this for you, and you pay me.
Right.
That's a free market.
Exactly.
And that's the way.
Now, the world told to me, okay, and I'm just repeating why they did it. The geniuses in Washington at the time and in Ottawa, Ontario, looked at the trucking industry and said, whoa, this thing uses a lot of steel. It uses a lot of rubber.
Oh, okay.
It uses a lot of gasoline.
Right.
It uses a lot of men. We need to protect it.
Yes, from competition. I did hear this right. I heard it a long time ago. So if you think they regulated trucking, utilities, and airlines, maybe
right.
some others too.
Yeah.
And the explanation was trying to cover the whole country efficiently with a full network.
Right.
The utilities might be a better example.
Yes.
We got to string wire everywhere to every house. That's unimaginable.
Right.
And if we allowed competition, nobody would succeed and we would never build the system.
That's
trucking the same way.
Yeah.
It will never be able to grow
and
keep
that's
collapsing.
Why.
And I would have to believe that when they were doing that, the idea was, and I would prefer just a free market,
oh, yeah.
but you could at least say there was some logic behind
there
it.
There was.
Maybe we could get faster for all of us, but I have to believe there was the thought that at some point when this people will open it back
right.
up to a free market, which we did. So it's not like it was even maybe Jimmy Carter. He did it. This had to happen. It had to come. We knew that ahead of time.
Right. It had to happen. And you also had to make sure you could move cargo from California to New York. Now, it wasn't until 1960 that I think it was CF moved the first through load from coast to
wow.
coast. That's how recent it was.
Wow.
So how it worked before, and it even worked a little bit when during the 70s it was still there, and even there was remnants of it in the 80s. In the early 80s, just until deregulation really kicked in, so you'd have a load going from, let's go California to New York. Either the carriers would just, they would drive through California, maybe Nevada, and then give the trailer to somebody that had Utah authority. And that trailer would pass maybe six or seven different hands
wow.
from coast to coast. That's how inefficient it
yes.
was. And that was a real sales tool for us. There was a everything took so long because it was regulated.
Yeah.
And there's a company that's gone now, but it's a great example. Maisland Transport,
okay.
big carrier out of Montreal, Toronto, that went into the
Just
New York.
Real quick, what size? So you said real big. How many trucks would be? Because I don't think it's anything near what we would see today, right?
No, because things were different.
Exactly.
Okay? And also by Canadian standards. But still,
yeah.
they probably had a good 1,000 trucks.
That is big.
Okay.
That is big.
And they would drop their trailers because everything was so efficient. Everything was hand-bombed in those days. Okay. Stuff would be on skids to the back of a trailer. Very few loads would you take the skid off.
Cross back.
Okay.
Okay.
Everything was hand-bombed. So it was like shooting sitting ducks. Okay. We would just go around and look for these trailers, and we would go in the front door.
Yeah.
And we would say to a shipper, listen, I understand you're shipping to the U.S. Yeah, we use Maisland. And I'd say, well, how many days does it take to get, you know, where are you shipping from? Well, New York to Toronto. How many days does it take? On a good time, they're 2 to 3 days. How about 12 hours? Well, there's no way you can
wow.
go for 12 hours. How much is that going to cost me? $900. No way.
Wow.
I pay Maisland $3,000. Well, I'll tell you what. If I can't do it in 9 hours, don't pay me.
Hey, be careful. You're treading on dangerous waters here. You're one of those cheap carriers. You're driving all the rates down. Oh, that's even worse.
You know what? The guys were thrilled because they were coming home empty before that.
So let's talk about that concept right there.
Okay.
I have this saying, and I say it all the time, so I keep remembering it. I don't remember where I ever picked this up because I read so many books. And it was, they built up this big thing that they're going to share the true secret. secret to success in business, any business. You do this, you are guaranteed to rise right to the top of your market. And here's all it was. The statement sounds so simple, but the three of us know couldn't be more complicated. The secret to success in business is to serve your customer better than anybody else can serve them.
Bingo.
So what were you just talking about there?
Service.
And what is a part of that? It is price. We're not driving the price down because we want to.
No.
We're giving this, our customer the best
value
we can.
And
I have such a hard time getting this across.
So it's two prongs, okay? There's two prongs here, okay? We're giving the customer the value. We're also supplying these little trucking companies, these mom-and-pop truckers that had outbound freight going to New York. Now, they were gypsy truckers.
Yeah.
Okay? They leased their truck in those days, how it worked up in Canada. If I owned a truck and it was, it was Chuck's leasing, I would lease the truck directly to the customer.
To the customer?
Yes.
Okay.
And I worked as a driver for a pseudo driver service agency.
Got it.
Okay. So that was our loophole.
Yeah.
And then Trafix hired both those companies to move the freight for the for the customer. So that poor guy that was driving to New York now had a backhaul.
Right.
And some of them didn't have backhauls. They had their own load from New York. They could get them a load down to New York.
Wow.
Then other ones just came about looking for work. Like, you know, there was a couple. They had a cattle hauling business, and they had about 9 trucks, and they weren't making any money in cattle. And I was just giving them round trips. So I kept those trucks. They were all cattle haulers. These
guys were
the best drivers in the world.
That's right.
These were amazing, and I kept those trucks busy for 5 years.
Wow.
You know?
Nice.
So
wow.
It was a two-pronged thing, and we built up that company. There were two of us in the office, and when I sold out 2 years ago, it was over $1 billion in sales.
Wow.
Just working on that same. Now, granted, we branched out into
over and over and over.
Exactly.
Over. Right,
but that was our core.
Right.
And it was a great run, and that's why I want to give back, because this industry has been so good to
all three of us. It's what we do. We give back to the industry. We all have the same reason.
Yeah.
And I say it this way, and I get to talk about my best friend again. So I grew up in the industry.
Yep.
My grandfather, I didn't know my grandparents very well. I was born really late to my parents.
Right.
Youngest of 7. All my grandparents were dead by the time I was 12. I don't remember them at all. So I just remember the story of my grandfather. And I kind of tried to go back and look at what it must have been like when he was in, like, the seat in the truck was a wooden bench. I mean, we're going back a long way here.
Yeah.
He was a contractor for a moving company.
Wow.
Way back then, because people were moving all the way out west. Somebody's got to get their stuff out there. And I thought, how did you even do it by a truck? The roads,
they were lousy.
Or they might be dirt.
Yep.
What about fuel? I can't even imagine what that must have been like for
him. They carried jerry cans, some of them.
Well, there you go. I wish I could have that experience tomorrow.
The
know
best
what it was
I can
like.
Do for you, Kevin, is I started in my retirement. I started to collect old trucks. So if you come up to Ontario, I've got 4 of them.
I will.
And some of them, I got to tell you, I've got a 62, a 63, I think, and I've got a 72 and a 67. But the older ones, I got to tell you, I've got 2 B model Max. You get in those things. They are basic, okay? And, you know, I go to the gym every day. I work out.
Right.
When those things aren't moving, you actually drive. That's not like this truck here.
No.
You feel the road.
Manhandled it, too.
There's no seatbelt in it. But oddly enough, with no seatbelt, wooden dash, there's no airbag. It was safer to drive those trucks in the 60s than it is this truck in 2024.
Was it because you went so slow?
It was. You did go slower, but people knew how to drive.
Well,
and people had respect.
There
people had respect for truckers. And, you know, I get really, really upset with all this garbage I'm seeing on social media of truckers filming other truckers doing stupid stuff. There's not one person in this whole room that did not do stupid stuff when they started, okay?
I might have the trophy.
No, I do. But when I was doing stupid stuff, there was always an old guy there said, whoa, and he did take out his camera.
No.
He said, here, this is what you do. Pull in straight. I'll guide you. And you know, I do that for guys today.
Yeah. Now, he might slap you upside the head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Start screaming at you.
He might scream at you.
Yeah.
But he's helping you.
Yes.
Not filming you to try to get more likes on social media.
But, you know, we need to do that. We need to help each other because there's another generation behind us that we want to bring into the industry. If we want a healthy industry, we need youth. And by making us look like a bunch of idiots, we're not going to get them.
Yes. Now I have a serious question for you.
Go ahead.
I was born in 1963. Would you sell me that one?
I can't, but I'll get you.
I've always thought.
I'll get you one. You want a 63?
I would.
What make?
Let me think about that.
Okay, because I'm in the market.
Think about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can get you one.
I've always thought if I love old trucks.
Yeah.
I don't want to collect them, if I ever had one, I thought, why not the year I was born?
Yep. I'm looking for a 53. I'm 10 years old.
Well, there you go. What would you want? If you, your year, what's that?
69,
what year?
There you go.
69.
Sure.
Okay. What model? What would you get?
I'd something with a two-stroke Detroit in it.
Well, that would be for me, too. My first truck had a two-stroke Detroit. Fond.
Preferably a 1271.
Okay, 6V92 is what I had.
Screaming Jimmy.
And mine was a road boss, two short nose.
Oh, my God.
Short nose.
Yep.
Tag axle.
Yeah,
six by two tag axle.
I once had
it
a
was,
tag.
It was a roadway.
Right.
And from what my father told me about how those LTL companies worked, he said, with those trucks, he said, in the shop there were crates of motors on racks.
Yep.
And he said, you would just yank one out, throw another one in. And he said, that might happen way before 500,000 miles.
Oh, yeah.
Typically,
I got thinking about, I kind of know how many miles those trucks get put on them in those slip seat operations over the years. And I calculated, I thought, by the time I got that thing, it's possible it could have had like six engines in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, most
Think
likely,
about that.
Right?
Yeah.
A lot of those old Detroits only lasted 200,000 miles at the most.
That's what he said. And I couldn't fathom that. He must not be remembering right?
He was right on the money.
Yeah. That's just insane to think about that. Now, the roadway had, I already described it, no power steering, of course.
None of
it. No air conditioning, no radio. Two gauges.
Yep.
That was it. Two gauges, speedometer, and an air gauge.
Air gauge.
Because you had to have those.
No tach?
No.
Oh.
No tack. Speedometer.
That's why it lasts 200,000 miles.
Speedometer, because you do have to know how fast you're going, and you have to have an air gauge by regulation.
Yeah. Right.
That it only had what it absolutely had to have. But I will tell you what, I loved that truck, and I made so much money with that truck, and I paid $8,000 for it, but I had to borrow every penny of the $8,000, but it was worse. I was in Northeast Ohio. Roadway had just bought Spartan Express as their non-union LTL carrier, and they decided to go all independent contractor. So I had to borrow the $400 to fly down to Greenville, South Carolina to pick it up. You are going to appreciate, you might do, but I know you're going to love this. When I got down there, they had 15 of them in a line. They either had the Detroit or a Cat, but I don't even remember what the Cat would have
3208.
Been. 3208. Would it be a 3208?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. They had air starters. That was fun.
Oh, I remember the big tank.
Yeah, I loved that thing. You know what the fun part about that was?
What's that?
When I was sitting, I did a lot of P&D work, but there were days I'd have to sit and wait an hour or so for lunch, maybe for my first pickup to hit.
Right.
So I'd sit there in the truck stop with the truck off, wait for somebody to get right in front of it, hit that thing. It sounded like a jet engine going off, and they would jump every time. But I that truck, I just made so much money with it. I never had any real – I can't even remember anything I fixed on it. I know I did, but I don't even remember it. Nothing major. But it was – the joke was when you pulled up to the pumps, you filled the oil and checked the fuel.
Pretty much.
You know, I want –
No, back to that line.
Right.
I had to, before I went down there, because I knew I was going to have all these options.
Right.
I had decided I just didn't want the Cat. I did want the Detroit. I'm not even sure why. I didn't know enough about engines.
Somebody gave you good advice.
Maybe.
The Cat was very expensive to.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And it had to be advice because I didn't know anything back then. But I had worked out this piece of graph paper with like everything I could think about that might affect this truck and how it was going to run. I wasn't really thinking about cost. It was more like, what did I want kind of thing. And, you know, what's the tread depth left on these tires compared to this tire? But if I want this truck instead of that truck, could I get them to swap tires? So I had worked this all out ahead of time, and yet it still took me like 8.5 hours walking back and forth up and down the line, comparing this to comparing that. But you know what? It paid off. The way Spartan built that was they found young drivers who were willing to get started, not any kind of a lease. You had to buy the truck from them. The title went in your name.
Yeah.
So I was one of the first ones that bought one of those and brought mine back. Everybody else went down. Almost everybody went for the Cats. One of the Cats seemed to be their air starter was always a problem. Maybe just the higher torque to get it going, or the higher compression to get it going, where Detroit spun pretty easy, or I just got lucky. My truck could sit there for like 2 weeks and the air starter would still fire right off.
Wow.
Those guys with the Cats were almost every day. They had built tanks and hoses because they knew they had to have air just to get it started every day. Almost everybody, I thought they were going to sue the company over how bad these trucks were. And I was just driving around. It just never had a problem whatsoever.
You know, a lot in business is luck. And it, you know what? If you have a choice between being smart and being lucky, be lucky.
I was lucky. That was pure luck back then. Because I thought I knew, but I was, like I said, I was looking at tread depth. Is the seat still in good shape?
Yeah.
Is there a seat cushion? I mean, that's how bad these things were.
It's exactly right. Back in the day, they were just stripped down. And the thing about the two-stroke Detroits, especially back then, is they were so common. I mean,
that is true.
You know,
easy to work on,
very
too.
Easy.
Right.
Very
easy. And that was the big thing with Detroit. And Cummins also were pretty easy to work on back in that era.
That was the only two-stroke Detroit I ever owned. I went right from that to the Cummins, and it was just around the time the Big Cam 350 was like the monster motor.
Yeah.
If you had a Big Cam 350, the 400 might have been available, but I just heard Bruce say yesterday it was a $12,000 upgrade.
A lot of money.
How much did the truck cost back then? I mean, that added an incredible amount of money to that truck.
Yeah.
So the Big Cam 400 was pretty rare.
Yeah.
Even the 350 wasn't popular yet.
We were two-stroke Detroits as far back as I can remember.
Really?
And my dad ran them out till they absolutely died. And I mean, we were still in the mid-80s, and we were running two-strokes. And,
how much weight were you pulling?
It was crazy. We were in that 60,000-pound range. So, but
okay.
we were running some 1271s. And, hey, we'd throw a turbo on one every now and again. They would bark pretty good. They ran all right. But,
you had to love the sound.
Like the 671s and the 871s.
Yeah.
Jesus. They sounded cool.
They sound awesome.
A whole lot of noise and not going anywhere.
The only problem, they did leak oil, all of them.
Oh, like an old Harley.
Yeah.
Or MG.
Yep.
Austin Healey, all the English cars, they were the same way. So you'll know this. You learn it pretty quick, but when it happened to me the first time, I was still a really new driver, and I totally freaked out. I had to back way down into the building. Like, I almost had to come two full truck lengths out of the building to back into the stock. They were loading 55-gallon drums, and it's all local. Nobody cares about the weight. All I have to do is get it back to the terminal.
Right.
They had 55-gallon drums from front to back. I could see the suspension, tires, everything was starting to strain. So I go up there, and I'm normally really light P&D stuff. So I go up there, and I drop it into third, like a dummy me, because that's what I do every day, because that's the best gear to start in. I drop it into third, go to let the clutch out. I can see this is not going to work. Hit the clutch again, and something weird is happening, but I can't figure out what it is. And all of a sudden, smoke is rolling out under the hood, and I panic because smoke is starting to fill the building, and I'm like, I got to get out of here. So I drop it into low. I start to let the clutch out, and I'm like, what is it doing? And I realize, why is it trying to go backwards? And then I thought, okay, I put it in reverse, and it starts to go forward. And I'm like, it's starting to come out of the hill, but smoke is rolling and it's banging and making all kinds of strange noise. And I thought, I got to stop, just turn it off. Stopped, I turn it off. The people in the dock are screaming at me because smoke's everywhere. So I thought, what am I going to do? I'm going to call my dad. So I call my dad, and as soon as I start to say it, he said, are you in the truck right now? And you turned it off? And I said, yeah. And he said, just start it up. And I said, Dad, they're screaming at me. He said, listen to me, just start it up. And I said, Dad, you don't understand how bad this is. He said, I do, just trust me. Hit the key, smooth as could be. It was running backwards. So you got the momentum going this way, and all of a sudden it has to go back, and it will catch.
Yep.
And it's a two-stroke, very, very simple. It can run backwards. And so if it's running backwards, then the gears are all not backwards.
You're able to shut it off. A lot of times they won't.
It shut right off. It started right back
up. You were lucky. Because I never.
Oh, no, you know what? I had to get back to the dock and just dump the clutch with the dock. That's right.
Right.
I had to dump the clutch with the dock there.
Yeah, I never had it happen to me, but I heard about it from other guys. But
we had one.
With old Detroit running backwards.
Yeah. We had one where we were out in the mud and we bogged it down, it caught, ran backwards, and we couldn't. We pulled the air kennel. It still wouldn't shut it down. So we ended up taking a Carhartt jacket, and the exhaust was the air intake at that point. We had to wrap it around, and it killed it.
Well, that's why all the smoke's rolling out
of the air
cleaner. The air cleaner is now the exhaust.
Yeah, it's running on the engine. It's just,
right.
No shortage of that either.
So I got to tell you, everybody listening, that I was so excited when I saw Chuck today.
Likewise.
So I want to tell you this, Chuck, because we just relaunched the CMC program. I was telling you a little earlier, but we didn't have a lot of time. You've got all kinds of meetings. So I wanted to tell you a little bit more about how the program's changed now. And it worked. So, you know, because you were a part of our CMC program, and I want to tell you this. We probably brought in over the years 30 other speakers. The last event, we might have had like 17, 18, 19 speakers just at that one event.
Right.
We had been through other speakers. We did incredible amounts of surveys, detailed surveys. Our people wanted them. It wasn't like we were annoying them. And Lisa was the one that did that, and it was the most brilliant thing we had ever done. And hands down, you were always the number one speaker of any event we ever had.
Wow, thank you very much.
You are one of the very few treasures left in this industry, and I am so
thank you. It really touches my heart.
To have met you and to have this kind of friendship with you, and
likewise.
Thank
and Kevin, you know, I talk about you quite often because I don't know if you people out there know how many people's lives this man has saved, hundreds through his nutrition and health program. Because I remember, I don't know if you remember, Kevin, I remember being with you in Kansas City, and it was on the Sunday, we were starting on Monday, and I said to you, Kevin, have you ever thought of maybe changing things? I said, in 3 years, all these people are going to be dead. And he goes, what?
I remember.
Why are they going to be dead? I said, because they'll go, get the reading.
I actually remembered. I wanted to think very carefully before I answered because I respected your opinion so much. I wanted to make sure I said it right because I knew my answer at the time, and I didn't want to go down that road. And I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you why I was expecting it, because one of my employees had been bugging me for 2 months. She was one of the nurturers we were talking. Kim.
Yes.
Oh, I can tell you because you know Kim, of course.
Yeah.
Kim was doing that to me. And I remember I said, Kim, you know I love you, but here's the thing. I study business, and one of the things that can take a company down quickly, trying to be everything, everybody,
I get it.
And I'm so terrified of that, and I don't do that. I know it. I have enough background. I need more training, but I have enough background. I could be good at it. I get it. They trust me. Somebody's got to do it, and it's not that I don't want to. But if I destroy the whole company, right now I help people with their business, their money, and we had huge success stories back then, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, what if I try this and I take down the whole thing? And I just couldn't do it. And then when I heard it from you, I'm like, I just have to be so careful about how I respond. I don't want to offend you. I respect you so much.
Thank
so I probably
you.
Said, okay. You know, I'm thinking about it. Something wishy-washy like that. Kim pounded on me for a year.
Well, I saw you here. I got to tell you, I got to interrupt you. That was in the fall, that CMC in Kansas.
Yeah.
I saw you here in March, and I didn't recognize you because you had lost 40 pounds.
Yes.
And I said, what the hell happened to you?
I took your advice.
And my God, he says, I discovered something. I said, what? Tell me what you discovered. It's called keto.
Yes, that's right.
Man, what a difference.
So, Kip, for a year, we were talking earlier about the nurturers, and Kim was a nurturer.
Yes, she was.
She's the most caring person.
Yep.
So I always had to, I would get inside. She would bring it up again. I would get the alpha would come out, and I would have to be so careful. And I would say, Kim, I know I've thought about it. The answer's no. And she said, Kevin, I'm just going to keep bugging you. Fire me, whatever. You'll say yes eventually. And I would say, Kim, don't. I'm not going to say yes. She kept up. It took about a year. And, you know, she said one thing one time. One thing. So let's say it hadn't happened. How much different, how many lives would not be? So this one sentence. So I didn't change all those lives. This one sentence did. Kim did. She had tried everything.
Yeah, but you were the, you know what? You were the conduit. You know what?
I know.
You saved hundreds of people's lives.
Yeah.
You know, I remember those big guys that came back a year later.
It still happened every single day, and nothing could make me happier. Kim had tried everything, and she came across a quote, and she knew me good enough, and she knew this was going to be the one, and it was. And here's the quote. I still think about this every day. A healthy person has thousands of wishes. A sick person only has one.
Whoa.
That's what happened. I got goosebumps now saying it again.
You know what? I got
and
goosebumps
I looked at,
hearing
it. I looked at her and I said, Kim, I said, we have to do this. She got a big grin and she said, I told you I'd get you. But I said, here's the thing. I don't have time right now. And I've made a pledge to not talk about something on the radio myself until I know that I know enough. I can't lose the trust that I've built up. I've proven they can trust me with the money, the business. I've proven that. I've built that trust, and I can't ruin that. So here's what I want you to do. We will set up the podcast for you, and we'll call it Destination Health,
right?
And you have to do it. And I need you to do it for a year because I'm going to read the top 100 books on health in the next year. And then I'll join you on the podcast. And I will know enough to be confident. And I want you to just do this however you want. Tell people I'm not trained in this. This is how I helped myself. I just want guys to start talking about health,
right,
which was a perfect fit. I finished the books in like 7 months and went back to school and got the certification. And then here we are with Destination Health.
Nice.
One sentence.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. How powerful.
It really is.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
It is. So, Chuck, you two don't know each other at all, right?
No, not.
So
nice
we're,
to
we're
meet
just,
you.
We're just getting around to making the introductions here.
Good to meet you.
So would you say you've been around me a long time?
Yes.
Would you say I know a little bit about fuel mileage?
I think you know a lot about fuel mileage. You know, I used to listen to that show on the radio every day, and there was so much concern about fuel mileage. And you gave people the best advice. I remember one person in particular. He had a great big long nose, Peter Kenworth, and he got into it because he had to keep the truck. He was madly in love with it. It was he was passionate about that truck because you should never fall in love with a piece of equipment.
That's right. It's a tool.
And finally, out of frustration, he said, well, drive it down. How's it geared? Because you know your gears, okay?
Yeah.
How's it geared? And he told you, and you came back a second later, he said, drive it. You said drive it at 55 miles an hour.
That was a bad, really bad set of gears, but that's the only way you can figure
you
it
know
at
what?
That point.
That man all of a sudden could keep that truck
because
it meant about $28,000
a year. I remember
year.
The calculations on all of that. So let me try to sum up this. A purple truck right over there, purple haze, isn't that a beauty?
Yep.
That's his.
Nice truck.
He consults directly with Volvo engineers. They fly him over to Sweden. He tells them, well, let's try this. They test things. They develop things. Joel, tell him what your lifetime is in your 30-day average right now. Now, Joel is out running general freight with his own authority. He pulls a lot of Schneider stuff, pulls stuff off the load board. So we're not talking some weird specialized thing.
Right.
Any one of us could be pulling the same freight he's building. If you could build those.
So your weight is all over the place, right?
Yeah, yeah, right.
30
right.
to 40.
Yeah, average about 65,000 pounds on a straight average. 58,000. Typical. Or 10.